This is just a note. This episode does discuss abortion and touches on sexual assault. So please make sure you're taking care of yourself and your needs when you listen. It is 2024, but sometimes the news feels like it belongs in a much earlier century, especially for women. We continue to fight for economic equality, even as layoffs and rising inflation increase our everyday struggles. Even though the murder of George Floyd in 2020 brought to the forefront issues of police brutality against people of color, little has changed. A seemingly endless cycle of school shootings leaves us afraid to send our children to school, while our economic precarity leaves us struggling for childcare. Rising drug costs mean that while medicines can achieve extraordinary things, many women are bankrupt by healthcare costs. States pass bills that pretend to protect girls and women, but in reality are designed to attack and diminish the LGBTQIA+ people among us. And after the fall of Roe versus Wade, our reproductive freedoms are being steadily taken away state by state, leaving our very lives at risk. In times like these, it is all the more critical that women and their allies from all walks of life come together and work together to protect each other. And that means protecting democracy and securing our equal rights as citizens. Welcome to Feminism Now, featuring leaders and activists who are on the front lines of the fight for constitutional equality, economic justice, and reproductive rights. I'm Christian F. Nunez, the president of the National Organization for Women, and the theme of season two of our show will be Women Leading Democracy. We will interview leaders and experts about the critical role of women and feminist allies in the democracy of our nation, and cover the issues that affect women the most: childcare and voting rights, reproductive justice and gun violence, the rise of Generation Z, and the need for healthcare for all, from affordable prescriptions to gender-affirming care. We're talking to guests about all these priority issues, and we also want to hear from you about what's on your mind. You can do that by sending us an email at feminismnow@now.org. We're excited to have you with us on this journey. 2023 should have been a year of celebration. On January 22nd, it would have been 50 years since the passage of Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court decision that guaranteed pregnant persons a right to choose. But instead, what did we witness? It was a day of mourning. In 2022, the Supreme Court reversed that decision, throwing away the decision of whether or not people would become pregnant, have control over their bodies, back to the states. What's followed is a slew of bans as states try to restrict the pregnant person's right to have an abortion to 6 weeks or to no right at all in some states. Meanwhile, in a testament to how popular reproductive rights are, other states have passed protections, creating a patchwork of reproductive freedom and healthcare access across this country. So it's fitting that from our first episode of this new season, season two, that we should speak to one of the legends of the reproductive rights movement, Heather Booth. Heather is a civil rights activist who has devoted her life to equality for everyone. While in college in 1969, she formed the underground abortion service, the Jane Collective, in connection with the civil rights movement to help women receive healthcare, counseling, and abortion services. When Roe versus Wade was first passed, it seemed like the Jane Collective wouldn't be needed anymore. But now look at us. In 2024, it seems it might have been needed again. So everyone, help me welcome Heather Booth. Heather, thank you for joining us.
I am so glad to be here because I'm with now both Christian Nunez, the dynamic leader of the remarkable organization, the National Organization for Women, that was the forefront of the women's movement. I came out of women's liberation, but then joined with NOW, and I've been a supporter ever since. So glad to be with you and the broad leadership you provide, as well as the audience of those listening in who are also people who are fighting for freedom and justice and equality every day.
Yes, Heather, thank you so much. So we're going to get started. You have so much to offer and so much you can give. But I want to just kind of take us back to this time when we could talk about when you first founded Jane Collective in 1969, a little bit about what motivated you to start this important movement, this important service. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
What life was like before 1965, and certainly before 1973, before Roe became the law of the land, there are unfortunately so many horror stories to share. There were septic abortion wards in many hospitals because women were dying. They either had done injury to themselves or were injured by someone, sometimes unscrupulous people, taking advantage of women or people who, because it wasn't legal. On my college campus, a friend of mine had been raped at knife point in her bed. And when we went to student health to get a gynecological exam, she was given a lecture on her promiscuity and was told student health didn't cover gynecological exams. But because people organized, not only was Roe becoming the law of the land, but now, of course, student health would cover gynecological exams. And rather than being given a lecture, one would be given supportive care as well as safety, security to see that it would be less frequent, more rare, that people might be raped and abused. In 1965, I had just returned from the Mississippi Freedom Summer Project. I was part of the Civil Rights Movement and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. We went to Mississippi, many of you know the story, when Northern students were recruited to support courageous African Americans who were struggling for the right to vote. And during that summer, tragically, three of the young volunteers were killed at the hands of the Klan. But because we organized, even in that tragedy, within a year, we had a Voting Rights Act. And that's the basic lesson I learned, which is when you organize, you can change this world. And I particularly learned we need to organize with love at the center, building a beloved community. So I had returned from Mississippi. I was living in Chicago at the time, and a friend of mine told me his sister was pregnant and not ready to have a child, not sure what she would do. Was she even suicidal? And could I find a doctor to perform an abortion? I hadn't really ever thought about the issue before. It was a more innocent time, and maybe I was a more innocent person. And I said I would do what I could. So I went to the medical arm of the Civil Rights Movement, the Medical Committee for Human Rights, and I found a remarkable doctor, Dr. T.R.M. Howard. I made the arrangement with Dr. Howard, and I thought that was it. I thought he would take care of this one-time act for a friend. But after the procedure, which was successful, word spread from someone else, not from me, and I got another call. I made that arrangement with Dr. Howard, and then I got another call. And I realized we had to set up a system. And so I learned from Dr. Howard what was involved. You know, I had never had an abortion myself. I've never faced the situation, but I had to learn what was involved. What do you do beforehand? What do you do after? Is there any pain? What should we look out for? How much does it cost? Can we negotiate on the price? Oh, it's $500. Well, could we get two people in for the price of one? Could we get three people for the price of one? And more people started coming through. At some point, because so many were coming through, rather than giving out my personal phone number, we publicized and said, pregnant, don't want to be, call Jane.
Wow. Let me just start off by saying, I love the fact that this story starts with love. And you said that it started because you loved someone and you wanted to be there for them and you helped. And that connection to love and then the connection to the intersectional involvement of these movements, right? Which we're still seeing today, right? So much of this is still connected to different movements and the need to say, we have to organize, we have to be together. These movements are overlapping and two different movements came together to work for the greater good. And if we cannot learn the lesson from this, I just have to really point this out right now. If we cannot learn the lesson from what you just said about how two movements came together for the greater good, when are we going to learn the lesson?
You are so right. All our movements are connected. Audre Lorde said, we don't lead single issue lives. And all our issues are connected. But this is the most intimate decision in a person's life. about when or whether or with whom we have a child. And no politician should interfere with that decision. And yet Donald Trump is glad. He claims credit if he's overturned Roe and denied this not only to the people in 20 states where abortion is now either banned or under such restrictive laws that it's inaccessible for so many, but they really want to see a universal ban. And that's one of the issues that's at stake in the election. They're even now trying to ban mifepristone, the way to have a medical abortion. And they're having politicians and judges with no medical background to make a medical decision and say that the Food and Drug Administration can't make a determination that this very safe product that's been on the market for over 20 years can be available. And that's another case that's coming up before the Supreme Court.
It's quite interesting how the politicization of reproductive rights has come up and how it, like you just said, people who have no earthly knowledge, no medical background, don't even really have the knowledge of even how the anatomy works, right? Some of the things they're thinking, even some of these bans, you think about them, and people are, they're criminalizing women for having miscarriages, things they cannot, their bodies cannot control. And they're making these decisions not because they care, not because they really truly value life, because it's politicized, because they want to control, they want power. It puts them in a position of power. And that's all it's really about. Like you said, Donald Trump is out there and he's sitting there claiming something because of how he's politicizing it to put himself in a position. He doesn't care about the impact. He doesn't care about the harm.
You are so right that this has become politicized. When I was first active on the issue in the 1960s, it wasn't a partisan political issue, but it has become partisan. During the Reagan years, there was a deal that was made between the right wing of the Republican Party that was at that point gaining greater strength and part of a white Christian nationalist movement. And the two made a deal. And the right wing of the Republican Party said that they would provide the political apparatus and some of the money, and the churches would provide the people. They would trade our lives for the political power to win tax breaks for the wealthiest, to drill wherever they want to drill. And this issue may not even have been important to some in the Republican Party of those days, but now it's become one of their core messages as they seek to take away our freedom.
I think this is so important. We really call this out. And this is why we call ourselves the truth tellers, right? Because it's important people really understand that this is not really, they want to make it seem like it's about something that it's not. So, you know, when we talk about this, and I know sometimes people feel so helpless, they feel like, you know, what do I do? But what one thing I want to point out is what we have seen is what we always see with women, right? And our allies is that we don't back down. We continue to push forward. And that we will fight this battle and we will continue to make sure that we're fighting for our rights and our bodies and our autonomy. And when we show up, what we've seen happen over the last couple of years since overturning Roe is that reproductive freedom is winning, right? When people are showing up, it's winning. So we know people care. We know people want their autonomy. We know people want their bodies. But for those who are feeling discouraged and for those who are feeling helpless, what would you tell them? What advice would you give? As one of the best civil rights activists that I personally know.
And you are my sister in this struggle. And all of those listening in are our sisters and brothers, those men of goodwill in a shared struggle. We know from history that when we've organized, then we can change history and make it better, make it more inclusive, more free, more democratic and just. That was the truth in the civil rights movement. It was a truth in the early women's movement, and it will be true now. It has been true in every referendum that's been on the ballot. When we've organized, we've won. It's been true in almost every special election. When we've organized, we've won. And what we need to do now is organize with love at the center, and we also will win.
I wish we had more time, but you just wrapped it up for us because this is what we need. This is what we need to motivate us and to get us geared up, is that when we center it with love and we organize, we will win. We're going to win this. We're going to win this reproductive freedom fight. We're going to win this voting rights fight. We're going to win back our democracy. And women will be the center. So thank you so much for just giving us some information about the work you've done with reproductive freedom and rights in your history and tying it into the importance of organizing and leading with love. I appreciate you, and I can't wait to have you back. So thank you for coming on Feminism Now. So for today's Action Now, I'd like to talk to you about Black maternal health. Did y'all know that the United States has the highest maternal mortality rate of any high-income country and significant disparities in health outcomes? And the crisis is only worsening. The Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act will address this crisis through historic investments that comprehensively address every driver of maternal mortality, morbidity, and disparities in the United States. So today, we are asking you to please contact your representatives in support of the Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act. Together, we can take action now. And now, back to our interview. So abortion is what people turn to once they're pregnant. But in an ideal world, people would not have to face the stress of being pregnant if they didn't want to. Well, there are many methods out there. One key one is birth control, we know about, right, Dr. Yin? And here is one of the bright spots in reproductive health. There are more options to birth control than ever before. And in 2023, the FDA approved the first over-the-counter birth control pill, but most people still haven't turned to their doctor or don't have birth control access. That access can be difficult, which is why I'm so pleased today to have with you today to talk about birth control and what this person is doing is so great and so important. We're going to have Dr. Sophia Yin. Dr. Yin is a board-certified physician in adolescent medicine and a clinical associate professor at Stanford Medical School. She is also the founder of the amazing Pandia Health, an organization that provides online access to mail-order birth control. Y'all, she is changing the game. So please help me welcome Dr. Sophia Yin with Pandia Health.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited to talk birth control and anything related to birth control, or we like to call it estrogen progesterone pills treatment.
Yes, thank you so much for being our guest today. And just really in this important time, as we're like seeing what's been happening, we're almost 2 years post-Roe. We're seeing the impact of what's happening. And we're also seeing how they're also attacking birth control. So we know how important access is to making sure that those who need birth control have it. And what Pandia Health is doing is just so crucially important. So Dr. Yin, can you tell us a little bit more about why you decided to found Pandia Health?
So I was giving a talk to a bunch of doctors. Why don't women take their birth control? And one of the top reasons that came up was, didn't have it in their hand, didn't have time to run to the pharmacy every single month. And as you know, you get to the end of that pack of pills and you're like, oh my goodness, I need to get to the pharmacy. If I don't get there, I will end up pregnant or, you know, I'll have bleeding when I don't want to have bleeding. And my friend and I are like, we could solve this. We will just ship women birth control and keep shipping it to them until they tell us to stop. And then we ran ads, free birth control delivery. And 60% of the women that responded didn't have a prescription. And it's like, don't you know you need a prescription for the birth control pill patch ring? And being a doctor, I could write prescriptions. And thus, Pandia Health was born. If you have a prescription and insurance, just tell us where it's at. We'll ship it. We make sure you never run out of birth control on our watch. That's our goal. You pay us nothing. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, no copay, no deductible for any FDA-approved birth control.
Wow, that is so important. And I also love the fact that you're able to really make sure that people are able to get that birth control for free of no cost, because we know people sometimes, those on the poverty line also have problems paying for birth control. So be able to utilize the Affordable Care Act and be able to access birth control of no cost to them is so critically important to making sure we're having economic equality and equity, right, in this process.
Absolutely. And then we also have the Pandia Health Birth Control Fund, to which people can donate, but people can also apply to cover the birth control pill. We don't cover the patch or the ring because those are crazy expensive. And if we did, then we'd run out of money.
Well, I thank you for bringing it up. When I was going into your website, I noticed the Pandia Health, you know, Emergency Birth Control Fund. And why I love that is it really is helping bridge that gap for those who really can't afford it. Sometimes some people say, well, $15 isn't a lot. But for some people, that is a lot of money, right? To pay that extra $15. That is a meal or that is a bill for some, right? But they also need to make sure that they are preventing pregnancies. And they should have that right. They should have that right to be able to say, I don't want to extend my family, but I also need to pay these bills, right? We shouldn't have to choose. So tell me, what is your hope that you hope will come out of Pandia Health? What would you hope the impact will be?
Well, the main reason is no one runs out of birth control on our watch to the best of our ability. But I realize that we're bringing, you know, UCSF, Stanford, better than UCSF, Stanford care to wherever you have internet and a mailbox. As a woman of color, I realized what we were taught at major medical institutions. Great, if you're a Caucasian female that wants to bleed every month. However, if you're of Asian or Black descent, spoke to my fellow Asian and Black doctors, I'm like, oh yeah, that drug that we're teaching everybody to prescribe everywhere does not work for our people. And so given that I dedicated the past 8 years of my life just on birth control, and then I have MIT, UCSF, Stanford background, I took a spreadsheet, took all the birth control pills, ranked them from most likely make you bleed, least likely make you bleed, most likely give you munchies, least likely to give you munchies, most likely give you acne, least likely give you acne. Took what I learned from the academic centers, put that in, and then fixed it for the side effect that we were seeing in people of Asian and Black descent. And so rather than you having to try three different birth control pills until you find the one that works for you, we have 95% of our first timers really happy with that first birth control pill that we have. And then we do a free 10-week follow-up where we're like, are you having breakthrough bleeding? Are you having zits? Are you having, you know, munchies? If so, then our doctors, and they're the only ones trained in this algorithm because I made it up, but based on science, that they can fix it. They can be like, oh, you got munchies? Let's turn this down. You have breakthrough bleeding? Let's turn this up. And with that, we see 82% retention at a year versus your standard 30 to 55% retention for somebody new to the birth control pill.
So this is what I called patient-centered care, right? When you're actually sitting there thinking about, let me think about the impact that this has on different people, the intersections, the intersectionality, the part of thinking about how does this impact different groups and their bodies, their genes, their physiology, their lifestyle, the fact that certain groups have different other comorbidities, the fact they have different health conditions that impact them differently. But what you did is you stopped and you said, I already know that this has not been centered around my Black and Asian and BIPOC, you know, sisters. And so let me stop and do what I know that I would want to do done for me. And let me put a little bit of research in this and then let's check in and make sure it's really working. So when we think about this a little bit more, I also want to know, when we talk about post-Roe world, what do you feel like your role of Pandia Health and other organizations are going to be in post-Roe? We don't plan on being post-Roe forever, but while we are here, what do you feel like your role is in other organizations?
What we saw happen was a 3x increase in the demand for getting your birth control delivered in starting birth control. And it wasn't just in Texas, where we would expect that to happen, but also New York, which I was like, you have pharmacies on every corner. Why do you need me? Pandia Health's role is to bring birth control wherever you have internet and a mailbox, to bring expert care. We've launched menopause, and there's only 1,300 Menopause Society certified practitioners in the entire country for the new 1 million women each year that are going through menopause. And we happen to pick up two of those experts, and they're leading our team for menopause. So our role is to provide the ability to prevent unplanned pregnancy with the pill patch ring. Though again, it's most important for long-acting reversible contraceptives if you can get access to that. We can't provide that, obviously, online. But until you're ready for that, we're here for you. And we also do provide emergency contraception, which is not medication abortion. It's if the condom popped or, God forbid, you were sexually assaulted or you didn't take your pills and you had sexual relations, heterosexual relations, then you can take a medication up to 5 days after that to decrease your risk of pregnancy. But better to be on long-term birth control than to use this. But you got nothing, better something than nothing.
Well, as you brought it up, let's talk about a little bit about, you know, Plan B, or I should say FDA-approved over-the-counter birth control pills, if so be it, you were to forget to take it and had concern of pregnancy, how do you see birth control being affected with FDA approval of that? And also what we're seeing happen as we go through with some of these abortion bans that are occurring?
Yeah, so I'm very concerned. I'm excited that one birth control pill out of the 40 different options is going over the counter. But if you're currently on a birth control pill patch ring, do not be like, oh, there's one over the counter, I'm just going to switch to that one. Not all pills are created equal. There are 40 different birth control pills, and the one that is going over the counter was approved in 1975, I believe, and taken off market in 2003. Not because it was bad, evil, or did anything, but it just wasn't as good. And so everything else that a doctor can prescribe you beats what is going over the counter. But what's going over the counter is the best thing you can get over the counter. But if it were me, my daughter, my friend, my patient, I would say go see a doctor if you can. Go see somebody that can prescribe you. Go see somebody that can give you at least the 40 different options. If not, if in person, then you could also add the implant, the IUD, and the shot. But if you got nothing else, yes, what's going over the counter is good. But the other part, know that it's a progesterone-only pill. If you take it 3 hours late, you're at risk of pregnancy. And who hasn't taken stuff 3 hours late? The movie ran long. You saw Barbie or Oppenheimer or, you know, the latest movie and you ran 3 hours late, or your soccer practice, or you fell asleep and you forgot. If you are 3 hours late on this new over-the-counter medication, then you will need emergency contraception if you had sexual relations in the past 5 days. Or if you intend to have sex, you have to hold off for at least 2 days while that hormone gets up to the level to prevent pregnancy. And I fear that this will not be communicated to the public. So it's our job as people involved in public health preventing unplanned pregnancy to educate that what's going over the counter is the best you could get over the counter. Have some emergency contraception around. And I would advise Ella, the prescription emergency contraception, over Plan B, because Plan B, if your BMI is 26, and my BMI is often 26 if I eat some extra dessert, or it doesn't work so well. Plan B and its generics do not work so well if your body mass index is 26 or greater. If your BMI is 30 or greater, it does not work at all. And Ella works up to a BMI of 35. If your BMI is 35 or greater, then your only option is an IUD, which can be used for emergency contraception, but you got to get in a doctor's office or the ER.
What did I tell y'all? Did I tell y'all we have the truth tellers on feminism now, or do we have the truth tellers on feminism now? Dr. Sovia, this has been so enlightening. This has been so helpful for our listeners. This has been helpful for all of us. This is information I want to share with the young feminists in my lives and those who are still, you know, needing birth control, you know? But I just think it's so important. I mean, because a lot of times, like you said, they don't tell us this. Thank you. Thank you so much for what your team, you are doing. Thank you, Dr. Sophia Nguyen. Thank you, listeners, for coming back for season 2. We are looking forward to bringing you interviews with wonderful guests this year, the feminists who are leading democracy. This podcast, Feminism Now, is a production of the National Organization for Women and Vox Topica. I'm Christian F. Nunez, NOW's national president. And if you like what you hear, please go to NOW.org, read up on our core issues and our approach to advancing women's equality, and get involved. We'd love to hear from you. Send your thoughts to feminismnow@now.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.